are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. Sitting across from me, as usual, is Alex. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tyus.
And we've got a bunch of crazy stuff to talk about because I think we're a little bit behind on recording, which I take responsibility for. My bad. Sorry, guys. But I'm just going to keep apologizing for it because it's not going to be a trend ending anytime soon. We both have busy, busy lives. I wanted to catch up on one thing before getting too deep into this. I think on our last episode, maybe the episode before that, I was looking for a specific word and the listeners came to the rescue by providing it for me. I was looking for something that was describing when you create a strategy and you get the exact opposite result, which in many, many cases, you could look to the government as demonstrations of those effects, but I couldn't figure out a word for it. And one of the listeners came to the rescue, and well, several actually did, but most of them were wrong. But there was one like paradoxical effects and things like that, which is a medical term. There was some cool stuff, but there's a thing called the Cobra effect, which is when described is perfect. It exactly describes it. And what they were referring to is like when the head of the cobra goes back before it strikes. So the cobra effect was the term I was looking for. Thank you to Peter for delivering that answer. I had no idea. So anyways, appreciate you. You guys are great. Alex, you were out in the field registering voters.
Yes.
All right. So yes. Tell me how that went. Tell me what went down.
You know, it was pretty good first experience. We used the Nationals re-register to vote banner that they'd sent us, so that was really eye-catching. So it was really nice, and we were able to give out lots of voter registration forms. Some people even asked us about the LP, which is good. That's why we were there. And everyone that walked by, which was close to 1,000 people that morning, would have seen our banner as they came in.
So was this at the DMV?
Yeah, we were posted up at the Sahara DMV, and we'll probably try a few other DMVs over the next few weeks.
Cool. Now, here's the question I've got, because I don't exactly understand this. What can you say and what can you not say during this?
Okay, so as a political party, the rules we have to follow are basically that we can ask people about, are you registered? Do you want to register? Would you like to register? That kind of things. But you can't mention which party you would like them to register as. But you can wear a baseball cap, a shirt, lapel pins, whatever you want of the, you know, side that you support. So, for example, last year you would have seen lots of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton clad young individuals out there doing voter registration. And so basically this is what you're allowed to do. Now, when they ask you, hey, you know, mention your shirt, or hey, what's the LP? Because most of them haven't heard, what's a libertarian? Then you're allowed to talk to them about the gospel of libertarianism.
So if they ask you what party are you with, you can answer. Mm-hmm. So you don't, I'm not allowed to say, I can't disclose.
No, okay. You're allowed to disclose, but only if they ask you about it.
Yeah, you can't push it upon them.
No, yeah, you can't be at the DMV and you can't be asking people, hey, do you want to register a libertarian or, you know, any of that.
Cool.
So you just have to ask people. We're on the form or one of the four boxes that you can check outside of nonpartisan. So I guess there's five. But
so why is this so terribly, terribly important to our party over, let's say, why the Republicans don't care as much as we would care on this one?
Well, the reason that it's so important to us, Tyus, is because we're only 265 people away from hitting 1% total statewide voter registration. That's extremely close. And the Republicans and Democrats are somewhere north of 30. Democrats might be hovering around 40% right now. So they don't need this victory. And getting to 1% is a big deal because it means that we have automatic ballot access, regardless of how our candidates do. Which is good because that'll keep making sure that people have a libertarian option on the ballot for years to come. The other reason it's good, though, is because if people start to take us seriously when we've got 1 out of 100 registered voters, you know, when it's that tangible number that people can quantify. It's not 1 out of 10,000 registered voters, which is what people think we are. The fact is that we've done a really good job to get somewhere north of 16,000 registered voters in the state of Nevada out of the 1.6 million registered voters onto our side. And, you know, 1% may not seem like a lot, but that's how you get to 2% and then to 5 and then to 15.
And that 1% grants us what?
Automatic ballot access.
Okay. And that matters because...
Well, without running candidates and putting people on the ballot, you don't really have a political party.
There you go. So if you're listening and that doesn't make sense to you, we need you to register to vote. If well, in general, like can I say it? Can I say?
Yeah, you can say it online.
All right, great. We need you to register to vote as a libertarian. We actually need that. That's really, really important to us. So if you're just sitting around being like, you know what? I align with these values, but it's too much work. I just don't care to go do it. Can they go to our website and get that done?
Yep. Our website, lpnevada.org/register_2_vote, will direct you to a page explaining the multiple ways that you can register to vote in the state of Nevada. Easiest way is on the Secretary of State's website. It will redirect you to that. I believe it's either that or the DMV website will also redirect you to the SOS, the Secretary of State website, and you can register to vote online so long as you have a Nevada issued ID.
Go out there, get that done for us. We'd really appreciate it. We take it as a personal favor. So thanks for going out there and getting that done. We need your help. So speaking of like just random cool things that were taking place, I was at the gym. I know it happens, you know, once a year. and somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, you're Tyus." I went, "Yep, that's me." And I had no idea who it was. And he goes, my name's Matt, and I heard you on the podcast. And then I found you on Facebook, and I'm following you there. And I watch your posts, but I don't really post myself. I'm a little frightened of doing it. Anyways, thanks for making me feel like a little bit of a celebrity, Matt. I appreciate you. Let's move on to a little bit of a news article. This is a minor one, but I figured we'd cover it just for a moment. And that is that news has come out that teen marijuana use has fallen to a 20-year low. And why this is interesting is because it directly contradicts what so many people said was going to happen when pot became legalized. Now, it's not legalized at a federal level, but at a state level here, it's legalized. Seems like every state is getting there as quickly as they can. Now, full disclosure on this, I've looked at the data on it, and it looks like it was kind of falling before before everything was legalized. So correlation might not equal causation. However, it is definitely the opposite trend of what a lot of people said was going to happen. A lot of people that were spreading fear and throwing out like, all these kids are going to get hooked on pot, and that's going to lead to cocaine and heroin, and it'll be the downfall of our society. Well, it hasn't happened. Everyone said, well, a lot of people that were freedom-based were saying this is not going to happen, and there's the results. Now, if you want to learn more about this, we're going to have a link on the show notes, so you can head over to the website. The show notes will be there, or you can go to reasonradio.com. They'll be there as well. If you are checking this out on YouTube, which has been, kind of hit or miss, but thanks for those who enjoy watching it on YouTube, there will be a link on the description that gets you back to the show notes as well. So let's move on a little bit to the big federal stuff. The big news in the federal world right now seems to be this Republican tax reform that's been bouncing around, going everywhere. And I finally got a chance to read up on it. I didn't read the whole thing because for a couple reasons. One, there's two versions of the whole thing, and it seems like it's going to be ratified and corrected, and it's a little discouraging to try and dive deep into something that doesn't seem like it's going to be completely figured out. Well, the first thing that I really noticed on this is while they're all saying this is a big tax cut, it's not. I was slightly surprised and mildly disappointed to find out that this is a tax increase for many and a tax cut for some, and it ends up equaling everything out. And an easy way of figuring that out is you can see what programs it cuts. If they if you end up with everything being the same and you don't reduce your spending in some way, well, you got to keep charging the same amount of money to the people that are funding you. Either that, or you have to print up more money or borrow more money, which we're very good at doing all of those things. So it turned out like the lowest tax bracket, well, it increased for them. There was a mid-tax bracket that increased. And so it wasn't really a big tax savings. Have you been following this story?
Somewhat, yeah. It's really frustrating because, you know, with the tax, quote unquote, cuts, it's really tax reform. The reform is, you know, screw the classic Republicans, right? Screw the middle class and the poor to benefit the very wealthy, not even the wealthy. I mean, most of the wealthy are getting screwed by this too. Only the super wealthy are really going to see a dramatic decrease. Now, are they paying more now? That's true, yes. But do they really need to be balanced out against small? I mean, that extra 2% on the middle class is much more hurtful. They're talking about taxing graduate students' tuition as income, which means that the government would be taxing a $30,000 stipend as though it was an $80,000 stipend, because they're going to count that $50,000 in tuition as income. So they're basically going to lose their entire stipend as a graduate student. You know, so basically goodbye doctors, scientists, engineers, lawyers, anyone that has to get an advanced degree, and that stipend was the only thing that kept them alive and able to rent a home. Now the universities are going to have to figure something out, because, I mean, medical school, if you had to count the value of your tuition as income, that's something like $400,000. I mean, if you get a scholarship, you're screwed. You're going to have to work a full-time job just to pay your tax bill on your tuition. So this has got really, really bad implications for students. It removes student loan interest deductions, even though it's outrageous how high the interest is on student loans, even though the stated goal of that program has been to increase number of students. They should either eliminate the loan program and then you don't have to worry about deducting student interest, or keep this as a way of kind of rewarding people who get out there and start paying it back. I mean, it's just absurd that the programs that were all cut seem to be the ones that benefit the poor and the middle class, and even the wealthy. I mean, if you make between $100,000 and $250,000 a year, I would probably consider you wealthy in most states. Maybe not California, but you know, it doesn't hurt. It hurts them also. Basically, only if you make over $250,000 a year will you see any benefit to this tax plan as it stands. And you're going to see a lot of hurt on some of our most vulnerable members of society. And this could have been an opportunity for Republicans to demonstrate across the board tax cuts, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this could have been their opportunity to say tax cuts are for everybody. I mean, let's be honest. The first 10% of your income that's taxed now, easiest thing to do is move that to zero. Yes, there are some people that wouldn't pay taxes, but everyone loses out. I mean, if you don't know how this tax bracketing thing works, you actually don't pay your top tax bracket on all of your income. You pay 10% on the first however thousand, you know, 15,000 whatever it is, and then you pay 15% on the next 30,000, and then money over that, you pay 25% up to the next amount, which I think is in the hundreds somewhere, and then it moves into 30, and then 33, and then 37.5. So there's like seven brackets, but you only pay for the first dollars you make on the tax bracket that that's assigned to. So you don't actually just pay your total. That's a popular misconception that people have about taxes. And so everyone would benefit by eliminating the lower tax bracket and making it 0%. And let's be honest, if you're making below $10,000 a year, that tax is negligible anyway, but it means a lot to the person making that money. Imagine if I gave $1,000 to a family that was making 10 grand a year, you know, and think about which kinds of people this is. Teenagers at their first job, people with low skill labor, people with special needs that want to bag groceries and provide for themselves. These are the people that are going to be hurt. Well, and everyone's benefited.
I have a friend that is I think he's a decamillionaire. What is that? Yeah. Anyways, he's in that range. And he was telling me that that this one actually bothers him. He's like, this is going to increase my taxes. And I was like, I thought this was going to be a benefit for people like you and bad for the poor. And he goes, we have to understand that when you're in my caliber, everybody like me, we make officially $10,000 or less per year. He goes, we know these systems. We know how to dodge these systems. We know how to move throughout these systems. He goes, you know, there's rich people that have lots and lots of money that they're sitting on, and that has nothing to do with income. And right. Then when it comes to the income side of things, they can buy things through companies and through foundations, and they've got all these different strategies that they can afford to implement, and they can afford to create strategies around. And ultimately, this, what it looks like to me right now, is that this reform is simply a new way of adjusting those different rules, and the rich and the powerful are going to find their ways around those rules, and the poor will not find their way around those rules, and of course they're going to be them in the middle class, specifically in the middle class, will be the ones that suffer. And what that ends up doing is it creates greater wealth disparity. Man, you think talking is going to be a prerequisite? Oh God, a prerequisite of doing podcast. I'm in so much trouble right now. I can't talk.
You get your coffee this morning?
I did not get my coffee this morning. So I'm on a chemical called 5-ATP, which is supposed to increase my serotonin in my brain. But maybe it just makes me stupid, like I have any intelligence left to lose.
Oh,
so. Anyways, it was an interesting conversation around the fact that what this does is it creates a bigger wealth gap, because the rich will always find the ways around it. As long as you create a complicated system, there's always going to be a way for them to negotiate that system. And the way to avoid that is to create a very, very simple system. The fact that our tax laws is... You could put it in a library. It's so much information. And you have to hire lawyers, sometimes teams of lawyers, to figure it out. I know Apple was in the news recently for how low their tax rate was because they were moving money around and they had tax havens and all this stuff. And the truth is, everything they did was legal. It was completely legal.
And it doesn't bother me that people do this. I mean, if I had millions and could pay an accountant to figure out how to save me money, I would definitely do it. Everyone would. Everyone listening to this definitely would, if you could have professional help avoiding taxes, especially libertarians, right? Illegally avoiding taxes. Of course you would. And so it's our vested interest to actually hold the Republicans' feet to the fire. And we did the same thing under Obama with the Democrats. So this isn't one-sided. It just happens to be the administration's Republican right now. It's up to us to hold their feet to the fire on tax reform. I am sick and tired of these big government Republicans. They are anything but limited government nowadays. They don't stand for fiscal conservatism. They don't stand for lower tax rates. They don't stand for lowering spending. In fact, they in some ways were predicting to raise spending over the next 10 years to cover without any kind of cover. So basically they would have to borrow more money. Their solution was, well, the national debt. It's not that big. $20 trillion isn't a huge number. It's a huge number, folks. $20 trillion is the most worrisome thing that the government itself knows is the biggest threat to our military. The generals of the Pentagon have multiply.
We're all in trouble.
Wow. have on multiple occasions testified before Congress stating that $20 trillion is the biggest worry on their worry list. Begging Congress to lower military spending, and among other spendings, and get them, get our budget back in balance, because otherwise we're going to be beholden to whoever will let us borrow money at some point. Right now it's China. It doesn't have to be China, but at some point we're going to be beholden to people who will either we're going to be forced to balance our budget because no one will let us borrow, we'll become Greece and we'll have our economy collapse, or we'll be forced to borrow from people who we might otherwise have invaded.
Yeah, or there's nobody will be able to loan anybody money because we've all spent all of our money. We've all become debt-ridden, which absolutely can happen. Unlike ever before, we've never seen an economic system like this. It's never happened in the history of mankind. So we're sitting on this incredibly interesting bubble, and history is going to be written based off of what happens next. Based off of the numbers I see, there's going to be a really nasty time of correction that is coming up, and prepare yourself for that.
Yeah, if you thought 08 was bad, just wait till the market corrects this latest travesty that the government has interfered with. This healthcare bubble, I think, could be the one, because it's such a huge percentage of the GDP.
Yeah.
And imagine the real estate crisis, but everybody in the whole country. And it's tied to healthcare, which is something that all of us need. It may not be a right, but all of us need healthcare in some way. And so imagine that system collapsing like a house of cards.
It's tied to our currency. It's tied to our debt. It's tied to our international affairs. This is nasty. This is going to be bad across the board. And there's very few, actually, I think we might be the only political party that seems to be looking at this really, really seriously and not increasing the debt, not wanting to expand spending. If you're a part of that and want to get involved, please join with us. We would appreciate it. You can head over to lpnevada.org and help out. We're going to take a little bit of a break while we talk to a speech therapist. And then after that, we'll be right back talking about the current rape culture and all these sexual crimes that keep taking place. Stay with us. We'll be right back in just a couple of seconds. Okay, thank you for holding out there. That's my new little transition piece. I hope you guys like it. It gives me a second to go, oh, okay, where am I? And then I can reestablish where we're at and come on back without having to make an awkward transition to talk about rape. Okay, let's talk about happy things like sex crimes. So if you've been on the internet or been watching the news, this seems to be all that anyone's talking about, even though probably what is more important is the economy right now with... if we're really talking about the future of our country. But as far as the news is concerned, these sex crimes seem to be the biggest thing out there. There was a big Me Too campaign that was going around where everybody was saying, you know, I was a victim of sex crimes, which is important. I don't want to, I'm not trying to downplay any of this, but I want to actually make it reasonable across the board. So maybe I'll go back to Bill Cosby. So Bill Cosby, is allegedly, he has not been convicted, but allegedly has drugged lots and lots and lots of people and had sex with them, which in my book is rape because it's non-voluntary. So very, 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 very bad. On the other hand, you have, let's say, other comedians like Louis C.K., who has asked somebody, hey, can I masturbate in front of you? And they said yes, and he did. And in my head, that's consensual.
And it's decidedly not rape because there was no penetrative sex, by the way. So by the legal definition of rape, it's not. And in fact, using that term really cheapens it. People need to learn the difference between rape and sexual assault. Rape means that there was penetration with an object or with the penis. Sexual assault is when there was some kind of, like, if he had not asked for permission before masturbating in front of her, that could be considered a sexual assault.
And I guess it's for me, I have a real hard time drawing the lines, but you bring up the exact important point. And that is rape is kind of considered one of the worst indefensible crimes out there.
Right.
And right now we seem to be in an area where the line is getting very, very blurred with what that is, and the allegations that are going around are very, very heavy. So some other examples that you may or may not have heard. Harvey Weinstein, very, very important, powerful man in movies and video and production. So there's all kinds of allegations about him offering parts and things of that nature to actresses in exchange for sexual favors. And apparently he delivered on them. These are the allegations that are out there. And I look at that and I go, that's kind of a free exchange of goods. That's not rape to me. Now, it might be terrible. It might be inappropriate, specifically because there's a difference in power. And I understand that. I understand that, well, doesn't that suck that he has this much power? But that's also what prostitution is. Prostitution is, I've got power in the form of money, and you want the money in exchange for use of your body, right? I'm not trying to say one thing is right or wrong. What I will say definitively is that the rape side of this is completely wrong. But I also think it's wrong to lump people in as being rapists when they have simply been maybe inappropriate. And maybe that's too soft of a term. I don't know. Another example is Kevin Spacey, right? So Kevin Spacey there was an allegation. He came forward and said, well, that's probably true. I don't remember, But by the way, I'm gay. And then for some reason, all of the articles that seemed to run on him was like, hey, did you know that Kevin Spacey's gay? And I'm like, you're burying the lead here. That doesn't matter at all. That's not important. Like, that has no bearing on this conversation whatsoever. We don't care about that. We care about, like, if he raped somebody. And I know this sounds like this is all, like, a man thing. Like, this is all guys committing these crimes. I just watched a video Bam, the guy from Jackass, I don't know his last name, Bam Margaritu or something like that. I'm sure I'm pissing somebody off who's a really big Bam fan. He tells this story online where he was raped by a woman, where he got so drunk that he passed out and he woke up and there was some woman having sex with him that was not consensual, and he did not want her there, and he kicked her off of him. And basically, he's laughing through this story, and I'm listening to it going, oh no, this is actual rape. This is definitely rape. And by the numbers, technically, more men are raped per year than women. Now, a big part of that comes down to prison, right? So you can look at it and say, well, really the issue is the persons that are committing the rape happen to be men. But the point is, there's victims on both sides here. There's problems on both sides here. And my bigger concern right now is while this is out there and everyone's talking about it, Are we painting the picture accurately for everybody? Another situation is Al Franken. Al Franken, there's a photo of him floating around with him on a plane. There's a woman wearing like a big bulletproof vest or something, and she appears to be asleep. And I don't know if he's actually touching the vest or not, but he's acting like he's grabbing her boobs, right? And like, I look at the photo, and yeah, it's in bad taste. It really is in bad taste. It's not rape. It's not even close. It's something that you would do in high school or in junior high that you'd think was funny. It's a lame joke. It's a bad joke. And maybe you go, well, we shouldn't trust somebody that has such terrible taste. Maybe that's true, but we shouldn't call that rape when it's not. A friend of mine recently told me a story and it really caught me off guard. She told me that she was raped, and she said that the only ex-boyfriend that she really talks to is the one that raped her. And I got really, really confused by that statement. And she told me, well, I didn't realize it was rape at the time, and I had said everything was okay at the time, and I didn't turn him down at the time, but after the fact, I really felt violated and didn't like what happened. And I didn't say this to her, and I'm probably going to get myself in trouble. This is me representing me, not representing a party or anything right now. But I had to wonder, was that really rape, or is this you upset about the choices you made in the past? And were those choices bad, and you wanted to look at it and go, you know what, I'm a victim rather than taking responsibility for the actions that I made? I know that's a bad place to put somebody, and I don't want to blame a victim. If it was rape, that's awful. But we've got to get really, really, really careful on where we draw these lines. Another example from my personal life is a close friend of mine in high school was always kind of crazy, interesting guy. And one day one of my friends tells me that he went to a retreat at some church and they were gone for like a week. And during that week, he was drugged and kept in a closet and raped repeatedly by the priest. And then he came back, he came forward, they gave him lots and lots of money as a settlement. He was messed up in the head forever. That's definitely rape. Like, that's 100% rape. Drugged, locked in a closet. It doesn't get much worse than that. Be very, very careful with the allegations you're putting on people, because this is one of the worst crimes that we can put out there. I'm concerned, like, as a straight white male, I guess, it seems that it's my responsibility when meeting somebody else of the opposite sex that I'm supposed to initiate. And I'm terrified of initiating. I'm terrified of approaching. Because now, if I say the wrong thing, I don't want to be called a rapist for the rest of my life. And maybe the only differentiator between being hit on and being sexually assaulted is, did you find the person attractive that was doing it? You know, if it's Brad Pitt that approaches you and goes, hey, I find you really attractive, and you're like, hey, that's nice, I'm not interested in you, maybe that's fine. But if it's Danny DeVito, suddenly Danny DeVito was a sex predator or something of that nature. I'm going to get off my soapbox on this. Do you have anything you want to add on?
Well, I guess I'll just summarize my own thoughts in that regret is not rape. And rape victims, to me, rape is the most horrible thing you can do besides murder. Murder is the only thing worse than rape. That's how high of a pedestal I hold rape up on, and how desperately we need to hear the stories of those who've been raped. And we need to, as a society, punish those who rape others, both male and female. But regret isn't rape, and all you do is you cheapen the very important stories of those who have been raped and the healing that needs to occur and the societal corrections that need to take place in order to prevent this from happening. Whenever you decide that, oh, well, I didn't really like what happened, so now it's rape, all you've done is you've cheapened the entire system that's been put in place to punish those who have actually committed rapes. And you start putting those seeds of doubt into the mind of the people who are on a jury that might otherwise have convicted a rapist. But now there's some doubt because, gosh, we've seen people make these stories up before. I remember one story that comes to mind is a man that had a football scholarship who was in prison for 5 years before the woman who accused him finally slipped up on Facebook and admitted it was false. And that information made it to the courts, and they were able to finally release him. He lost his entire life, 5 years. He was one of the most sought-after players for colleges. He would have likely gone on to play in a professional manner, even if it was only semi-professionally. He lost his entire life because someone made a false accusation. And in our, whether we like it or not, in our judicial system, we have a saying that it's better to let 10 guilty men go free than for one innocent man to be convicted. We have to keep that in mind. And that's why, as a personal appeal, and again, this is coming from me, not a political party, but as a personal appeal, please, please learn what your definitions are. Learn what the legal definitions are of rape and sexual assault. Don't just use those terms without realizing the very important implications that they have. And if you don't like something that's happening nearby you, then your best option is to leave. If you don't want someone masturbating in front of you, tell them to leave. If it's your property or if it's their property, then leave. It's that simple, really. And we need people in society to stand up and take responsibility for what's happening to them. You're not just you're not in a Netflix show where things are just passively happening to you. You have the very active choice anytime to get up and leave or to kick someone out if you don't like what's happening. And honestly, that's the basis of what libertarianism is that private property and your ability to defend it. And you are also private property. We have always contended on this podcast that you own yourself, and that means you have a right to ask people to leave any interactions that you have with your body, even if you change your mind in the middle, but that still doesn't make it rape what happened before. But you're allowed to change your mind. Just remember, that's not rape. It never has been in our judicial system, and it really cheapens those who have been actual victims of being drugged and penetrated and this sort of thing. If you're not sure if you've been raped, you should talk to somebody. Somebody else, I guararantee you, if you have those feelings,
a professional.
Talk to someone else.
No, a professional, yeah. not a friend that might be making the wrong judgments.
That's true.
Here.
I would talk to a professional counselor. There are many of them. They are wonderful. Talk to a professional. They can give you the guidance on, yes, that is, you know, and it's very tough to talk about. They'll have all the techniques and things that you need to be able to open up on this sort of thing. And then you'll know whether or not it's important to go forward. If you're for sure that you've been raped, you need to go to a hospital and have a rape kit done. That rapist will go free otherwise. Your only hope of seeing that person punished by society, and I'm sorry, but this is your only hope, is to go get a rape kit done. It's not pleasant. It's really, really, you feel violated a second time. It's horrible. But you only have a short window when they can prove that the DNA of the other person was on your body in an inappropriate way. They need you to go and get that done at a hospital. Call the police. Make a police report. Don't wait. Don't come forward 10 years or 20 years from now when there's doubt. Come forward when there can be no doubt And then as society, we can punish those who are responsible.
And if you're a person that feels insatiably compelled to masturbate in front of others, but just can't find the right opportunity, send those videos to us, boy or girl, we don't care. we'll give you an outlet. I won't broadcast it. I'll just be super, super amused by it. And
I don't think you know what you just got yourself into.
Yeah, I know. Whatever.
Yeah. Alternatively, you can also use this wonderful thing called the internet to upload them so that random strangers can comment on your videos also.
There you go. That's a good idea. Maybe I should have led with that rather than what's about to happen to my inbox.
Xvideos.com, Pornhub.com. There are plenty of options. Get out there. Become the next amateur porn star.
Enjoy yourself.
But yes, take care, everyone.
All right. We got to wrap it up. And thank you all for listening. Until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.